Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. Talk to Bob now. 210-599-5555.
All right. Well, a very good Saturday morning. And, I know, it's supposed to be fall now. We passed the fall equinox. I know temperatures are supposed to be getting nicer. I don't know what's gotten into the thermostat. It seems to be stuck on hot here in South Texas, but at least they're giving us a little bit of a chance of rain and promising once again a little bit of cooler weather in the coming week or two. So let's keep our fingers crossed. Lots going on out there, lots to talk about. Looks like Thomas and AJ are going to be first in line, but that leaves a couple of open lines. This is what I call the smart people's half hour, because I don't have to do a commercial break until 6 o'clock now. So if you've got that question that might take a little extra time, or if you just want to get your call in early, two lines left, 210-599-5555, and I look forward to talking to you. You don't want to know where I was the past week and waking up to 30-degree mornings instead of 75-degree mornings, but that's a whole nother story. Right now, let's talk gardening, and let's get started with these phone calls, and Thomas is first in line. Good morning, Thomas.
Hey, Bob. Good morning.
Good morning to you, sir.
That siphon device you talk about, that's where
right.
You put your liquid fertilizer out?
Yes, sir.
Will that work with molasses?
Oh, yes, sir. It will. You will dilute your molasses, to the appropriate point. The siphon mixer typically mixes at a rate of 16 to 1, meaning that the bucket that you've got your concentrate in, you're going to put your molasses 16 times as strong as you normally would. So, in a nutshell, that means that take your bucket that you're going to put your concentrate in. If you want to have it go out at the rate of 1 tablespoon per gallon, which is what I usually do, you'll put 16 tablespoons of molasses in there, and then figure out how much that amounts to, about a cup. But 16 tablespoons of molasses, and then add 1 gallon of water. And then your siphon mixer will work extremely well. Now, as you probably know, on the siphon mixer, you have to use a standard garden hose, not one of these little skinny mini things. It needs to be like a half-inch hose or so. And you can't use a nozzle on the end that puts a lot of pressure back into it. Now, just a standard Dram hose nozzle, should be no problem at all. But you can't use like a real fine mist nozzle or anything that puts a lot of pressure back. And I guess the last warning I would give you is you can't hook it to the hydrant and then put a really long hose on there. If you have to put two or three hoses together to get out where you need to feed, you need to put your siphon mixer between the last two hoses rather than at the hydrant. In other words, if you're hooking together, say, 350-foot hoses, go out and put your little mixing device. You screw it on the end of the second one through the third hose into it, and it'll work just perfectly. But the bottom line is it works on water pressure, and anything that puts a lot of back pressure into the hose, like a real long hose or a real high-pressure nozzle, that's going to keep it from mixing properly. If you keep those two things in mind, it will be the greatest labor saver. You will absolutely love a siphon mixer. I started with them when I was in the eighth grade, believe it or not. And it's still the same basic principle, and the price has gone up, but they're still very widely used and very, very effective.
Do y'all sell those at your store?
We do. I just got off a plane yesterday, so haven't walked in and looked to be sure we've got them on the wall. Call before you come over, but we normally keep them all the time here. They're very popular and very simple and very easy to use.
Okay, I got a couple other things. I haven't talked to you in a good while. You know this old sludge that gets on the bottom of a water trough?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I got the same thing only in the pool, you know, a derelict pool that I have.
Mm-hmm.
Can I put that stuff out and just spread it out?
Sure. Yeah,
smelly, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, what I would do is I would get Medina makes a product they call Biological Odor Control. And if you will put your sludge out and then spray it down with that Biological Odor Control, that'll really take care of most all of the smell. It may have a slight smell, but anything that's unpleasant or has a potential, to kind of get that fishy, rotten smell, this Biological Odor Control by Medina will go a long way toward taking care of it. And if you want to make it even more effective, take their Biological Odor Control and add a little bit of extra molasses to it.
Okay, that's a good idea. Another thing, I got this jasmine ground cover. Well, this last round of cold weather and heat.
Yeah.
Really did it.
And drought. And drought.
Yeah, it's not completely dead. But I got these leaves, these oak leaves, just packed inside that jasmine. It's a booger to get out, man. I mean, you know, you can blow it and blow it, and that stuff just sticks in there. What do you think about if I'll put some fertilizer down, then some compost, and then some molasses, and then wet it down real good? Will that help it come back?
That will help break down the leaves more quickly, and it most definitely, anything that's alive, you know, it will bring it back to life better than anything else I can think of that you can do. What percentage of it would you say is green, and what percentage of it would you say is brown at this point?
Well, in the biggest part of the jasmine, I guess it's about 50%.
Okay, well, yeah, it should come back with no problem at all, Thomas. I it should, as the weather hopefully begins to cool down and as we get a little rainfall, hopefully once again, it should improve this fall. We're just going to have to see what winter brings this year. If it looks like we're going to get, you know, more extreme cold, I probably would put a little more compost on it, or even a little bit of mulch just to insulate the base. I knock on wood, I've never seen, you know, three really bad winters in short succession. So I'm hoping, and it's just hope, that this is going to be a milder winter. If you believe the old Farmer's Almanac, it says it's going to be colder. If you believe what, you know, the El Nino forecast says, is going to be warmer. So just all I can say about this coming winter is be prepared for anything. And just be sure, if we do have really bad cold forecast, number one, be sure things are watered thoroughly. We've been so dry, and that's one of the reasons that we had so much problem, you know, with the last winter's cold, I guess early spring cold, you put it, is because it was so dry leading up to it. The temperatures were actually not as cold as they were in 21, but we didn't have the snow cover this year, and it had been really, really dry leading up to it, and that's why jasmine took such a hit. So who knows what we're going to do moisture-wise, but if it does look like we're going to be getting really cold, be sure that you water, that all your plants are well watered before the cold hits. Once temperature drops below freezing, you can't put any more water on things, or that'll do more damage than good. But I'm going to tell you, going into this winter with, you know, who knows what's coming, it's going to be really important on ground covers, on shrubs, and on green grass. Brown grass not going to make a lot of difference because it can freeze back to the ground like Bermuda and Zoysia. But going into this winter, unless things really change as far as the rainfall, it's going to be very, very important that we do water very thoroughly before any real cold events happen. But you already know that. I'm just saying that for the benefit of a few thousand other people out there.
I appreciate it. One more thing. Remember that snake I told you about that got in this little garden cabinet and got into that bird netting?
Yes, sir.
Well, I called this animal rescue in Bernie.
Uh-huh.
And they sent a couple out all the way from Bernie, and I'm about 30 miles away. You know, I'm right here in the
right.
And they were the nicest people. They got that snake had that stuff in his mouth. I mean,
oh,
he
yeah.
was so tangled up. And this fella and a lady, he got that snake, and he had so much patience. It took him about 30 minutes, Bob,
yeah.
to get that gum bird netting
yep.
away from that snake, and it took. They asked me if they wanted to. I said, no, take him away. You know, I don't. I'm not afraid of snakes like that, when it, you know,
yeah.
especially when I see them first.
Yes. Well, and I've had to do that same thing, Thomas, and it's just going through snip by snip. But Wildlife Rescue and Rehabilitation, Lynn Cooney started that organization probably 40, 50 years ago, and we've supported them ever since that time. And they do a lot of good things, and I'm sure glad they were able to help you out on that for for the snake's sake, and also just, you know, peace of mind. You call the right people. I can't say that I would always expect them to go 30 miles to help, but they do their very best, and, you know, a very high percentage of the time they do an extremely good job. So I'm glad you had a good experience.
Okay, Bob. Well, thanks for your time, and thanks for being there, you know.
Well, I had my weekend last weekend in Colorado, and, boy, talk about good for the mind and good for the body. So glad to be back here with you this weekend, and you have a good week, Thomas, and always good to hear from you. I appreciate the call. Thank
okay,
you, sir.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. All right, next in line is AJ. Good morning, AJ.
Good morning, Bobby. I hadn't talked to you in a while. You still sound the same.
And so do you. And I hope that lack of conversation means you haven't had too many situations to deal with. But I'm always glad to hear your voice.
Well, I gotta ask you one that's not your specialty. First off,
okay.
What does a short skirt and a sermon have in common?
Oh, you got me there.
Well, it's got to be short enough to get your attention, but long enough to cover the entire subject. So that's all you get from AJ this morning on side things, you know.
Okay, so it's short enough to short enough to get your attention,
but long enough to cover the entire subject.
You've started my day off with a big smile, very good. I'm making notes here. I can't wait to tell Dr. Kirby that. He and his staff are always looking for a little bit of humor.
It's very seldom that I get something clean like that. But anyhow, angel trumpets. I've had good luck with angel trumpets over the past 8-10 years. Mm-hmm. And this, I've been watering mine weekly, and that heat, you know, they just dropped all their leaves. The there was a few leaves on the stems, you know, they've got 8 foot tall.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever I'd water once a week, I would water early in the morning and spray water on the entire cane.
Yes, sir.
Well, bunch of them. The canes went brown, so I know that they're dead. I've got one bush that is still has is green, and another one has got a couple of green runners in it. At on angel trumpet, you normally take the cutting off the very tip of the limb, I believe, on the younger growth that comes off.
Yes, sir.
Now, if I run out of that younger growth, can I cut a piece of that top of that limb and use it as a cutting?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Just be sure, you know, that you keep it right side up. Angel trumpet typically has really big leaves, as you know, and you want to take off all the leaves except maybe two of them up on top. And they may drop off anyway. If they do, don't worry about it. Root them in perlite before you put them in the perlite. Soak them for maybe 30 minutes in a solution of Garrett juice and liquid seaweed. And you should do very well with rooting those cuttings. They're typically pretty easy. This summer, angel trumpets suffered from the heat. You're not the only one. Everybody I know that has angel trumpets, including us, they took it hard. Most of them will come back out. Even the ones with brown stems may very well come back out from ground level. But it was just the heat is all it was. It wasn't lack of care on your part or anything else. But, you know, I heard somebody, I don't remember how many days they said we'd had over 106 degrees. And it's just been for South Texas and San Antonio and the Hill Country. It's been a very, very hard winter on all the plants. So keep the faith. Go ahead.
I took one or two of them out. They're large clumps because they've been there for a long time, and I keep cutting them off in the spring. And I pulled some of the roots out. The roots look normal. They don't look dried up or anything. So I think they may come back. I got another question to ask you. I've got crimson clover quite a bit in the garden. I've had it there for about 10 years. And about 6 weeks ago, we got a light rain, a very light rain. And I noticed that seed was germinating, but it didn't last because of the heat.
Yes, sir.
And so I guess I'm going to have to reseed that crimson clover to make sure I got some coverage, don't you think? It should be starting to come up, you know, germinate fully, shouldn't it, by this time, or wait a while?
Well, I just wait until we get some moisture or until you can apply, you know, a good deal of moisture, because it's not going to come up unless the soil's pretty moist. I suspect that Mother Nature's pretty smart most of the time. It's just we can't always understand her. But she normally doesn't let all of a seed crop sprout at one time just in case the weather doesn't cooperate. So I certainly wouldn't plant any more seed till it cools off. And when you plant, if you can find any of the inoculant and it's been hard, well, that may not be necessary. If you're planting it just in places you've had it before, don't worry about inoculant. But sooner or later, and I'm optimistic, they're giving us our highest rain chances they have in a while for next Tuesday and Wednesday. I would get at least one good rain on it and see what, if anything, comes up before you spend the time and money, you know, putting out a bunch more seed. Because I would be willing to bet you that last little bit of rain, probably no more than 50% of the seed that was in the ground came up. It probably looked good to you.
No. It was less than 50%.
Yeah. There's probably a good deal of seed there, and if we could get some rain and a little bit cooler temperatures, I'd wait and see what comes up before I spend money, you know, putting out additional seed, because most of the time it's just not necessary.
Okay. All righty. All right. Well, I start pulling that clover back yesterday with a rake and getting the weeds under it because the weeds were coming up. And then I kind of pull that stuff back, but it's all fluffed up. I'm going to give you one more that I thought about, and then I'm going to let you go. But you know, Adam and Eve were the first couple on earth,
right?
Well, after about 4 months of married life, Adam was kind of getting fed up with the same cuisine every day. So he told Eve he was going to leave for a few days and go see if he could find something different. So he took off and went one, walked and walked and went to sleep out there where he was, and everything was the same. Next morning he got up and walked again, and still the same thing. Slept another night, walked and walked, and still the same thing. And so he went home, and he fixed his supper, and they went to bed. Well, about midnight, Adam was awoken. Eve was running her thumb up and down his rib cage and poking between the ribs. He said, "Eve, what are you doing?" She said, "Adam, I'm trying to find out if there was another woman." That one is kind of sneaky. You got to wait.
Yeah,
for a while.
You got to think about that. It's like one of my favorites is about the guy that thought he saw an Eskimo down on the Riverwalk the other day. It turned out to be an optical illusion.
That's not bad, Bobby. That's not bad.
It's
not bad at all.
Well, and I would tell you, the one other that I can tell you is about the woman who had spent most of her life helping other women with natural childbirth. And one day she just got fed up, bought herself a red convertible, and took off to the beach. You know what it was? It was a case of midwife crisis.
That's all it took.
So you get out, you have a great day. I'm glad that no worse situations than that have occurred, AJ. So call me again.
Those situations, I can't repeat all of them on a telephone, Bobby. You know how it is.
I know exactly how it is, but it is always good to hear from you, and hope everything's going well, and keep praying for that next good rain. And let me stick Carmen in here before the news break. Good morning, Carmen.
Yes, hello, sir. Good morning. Okay, this might take a little while. I don't know. This is a situation. Two large pecan trees on my property, well over 50 years old, have become hazardous, unfortunately, and they need to be taken down. In fact, one of them by the carport already dropped some limbs and damaged the carport roof, and the other one, that one already partially collapsed. And the other one has not collapsed, but it's right up against the house, actually pushing up against the house, making a small dent. And it's right on the property line above my bedroom, and also it has rot.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, I've received 4 bids on it already to take them down. And I just want, you know, your advice, because I've never done this before, ever.
Uh-huh.
You know, what to expect from the people that are taking it down, and what to expect on my part. And also, there were some smaller plants around the trees. I wanted to know if there's any way to, you know, to rescue them from getting trampled and, you know.
Well, if you've got a good arborist, they should be totally able to, you know, to avoid damaging those plants. Are there any power lines anywhere near these trees?
No. This is
okay. Well, the only reason I was asking
with power lines.
Yeah, if there were, it might be a good thing, because then CPS Energy might help without charging you for it. The other thing I would do is call your insurance, your homeowner's insurance company, tell them what the situation is, and ask if they can give you any help. You can tell them, you say, "Now, you know, I'm going to call you if a limb falls on my house. Can you give any help preventatively?" And I don't know whether it'll depend on your insurance company, but I'd like to find you some help as far as paying for it, because good company, you know, is not going to be real cheap. The next thing is, anyone that you are considering having do work like this on your property, you need to check and be absolutely certain that they have insurance to protect you. You know, if one of their workers falls out of a tree, they can sue you, you know, for you know, even though it wasn't your fault, if it happened on your property. So any reputable arborist will have insurance on his workers, and you demand to see what's called their certificate of insurance, because otherwise you could be opening yourself up to a world of hurt. But like I say, most good arborists will have this, but the guy that's just got a pickup truck and a chainsaw, you're really putting yourself at risk as far as the safety of him or her and their workers. If they don't have insurance, so make absolutely certain who you choose.
Can I mention the name?
Sure.
It's the Howe Foundation. That's what I was considering.
I would go somewhere else. I'm sorry. I would go somewhere else. I've not had good results with them, and I'm very sorry to say that, but I have not. Listen, I've got to go to news. If you want to hang on, we can talk a little more. This is KTSA Radio.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. Talk to Bob now, 210-599-5555.
All right, back to gardening. Don tells me we've got, we're going to talk to Carmen a little bit more, but after that, we've got a pretty much open board. So if you'd like to get through, it would be a great time to call us. You know the number, 210-599-5555. 210-599-5555. I would love to hear from you. And let's talk just a little bit more with Carmen. Carmen, if you choose to use that company, I would ask them for some references. I would call those references and see how well pleased the people were with their service. It's been several years since I had any dealings with them, and we had some customers that were very, very disappointed in their work, and but they may have changed. So I would ask for references, and I would absolutely demand to have a copy of an insurance certificate like we talked about before.
They showed that to me. Right.
Okay. Well, get a copy. Don't just let them show it to you. Get a copy.
Yourself. I have an email.
I do have a paper copy. Yeah. Do ask for some references and see how well pleased, because companies can change, and they may have improved. I just know, about 3 years ago, we had a couple of customers that were not happy. So, but I would do that with anybody that you call. Do that, and as long as you got the insurance certificate, you are protected. But like I say, you might check with your insurance company in advance. Tell them what you're looking at there, and see if they have. If they're interested in helping you out with that situation, because you can tell them it's a dangerous situation, and potentially, you know, if a limb from your tree fell on a neighbor's property, hopefully you have good neighbors and they wouldn't do that, but they could come after you for damage that your tree did to their property. And understanding that, I would think your homeowner's insurance folks might be willing to step up and help with taking down what we would just call a hazard.
Okay, this is I was just going to mention the Howe Foundation. That's not what they call not for profit, and so they have the best price.
Oh, I'm sure they do.
The second best price was another organization, company that was recommended by Mr. Edder, because I had him come out first, and he was very honest, said that this other company could do it for less.
And which other company did he recommend?
It was called the Spaniard.
Okay. Well, I would suggest, and Ed is the best. He's by far the best arborist in the area. But he, like you say, he pays his workers well. And unfortunately, you're going to have to, you know, pay him well. But and he's also usually 2 or 3 months behind. A person I would recommend that you call. The man's name is Jordy, J-O-R-D-I-E, Jordy Hagen, and his business is called Tree, kind of a little play on words. It's called Tree Wise Men, and I'll be totally honest with you. My business partner had a situation with a member of her family and a couple of dead pecan trees, as a matter of fact, and called Ed, of course, and he was so busy he couldn't get to it. Called Jordy, and he did the job for a very, very reasonable price, and he has good reputation to stand on. So before you make your final decision, call Tree, T-R-E-E, Tree Wise Men, ask for Jordy, J-O-R-D-I-E, and get an estimate from him. Tell him we told you to call.
J-O-R-D-I-E?
Yes, I-N. I'm sorry, I-E, you're right. I suspect his name's Jordan. I don't really know that. I just, all the years I've known him, he goes by Jordy. And
okay, Hagen.
Yeah, and his company is Tree, T-R-E-E, Tree Wise Men. I don't have his number because I don't call that often, but where it's nothing more than a tree removal, in my opinion, he's probably the best of the best.
Okay, I'll look into that, certainly.
Very good.
Okay, well, thank you. I really appreciate your advice.
It's what I'm here for, Carmen. It's always good to hear from you, and always glad to be able to help you. Please get back with me and let me know how you decided to go and how well satisfied you are with your services.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Good morning.
You too. Thank you. Goodbye. All right, Sandy and John are my next two callers. Sandy is first in line. Good morning, Sandy.
Morning, Bob.
Good morning.
I've been fighting what I think are flea beetles on my relatively newly planted tomato plants. I've
yes,
been
ma'am.
Using everything I can think of, diatomaceous earth, Captain Jack's dead bug, insecticidal soap. My fingers, if I can get them, you know, they're so fast.
Yes, indeed.
Do I just need to keep it up and they'll eventually... I mean, they're making a lot of holes in my plants.
Well, and the good news is it's all cosmetic. They're not really threatening the lives of your plants, but it'd be nicer not to have to do that. Two suggestions. Number one, the best spray, you can actually buy a combination of insecticidal soap and spinosad together. They simply call it spinosad soap. And we have found that it doesn't always get the adults, but it, you know, does a good job of getting the larvae, and it definitely reduces their numbers. I'll tell you what I have done in the past with flea beetles and also with the stink bugs is I've got one of those little handheld vacuums. They call the or used to be called the Dust Buster. There are a lot of different brands out there. And
yeah.
It's amazing how much easier it is to suck them up with that thing than it is to try to get your thumb and forefinger around them. And there's a certain satisfaction, too, to watching them go down that tube. But that's what I have done, literally, to vacuum off the leaves, get them off the leaves. You have to be careful so that you don't, you know, damage the plants themselves. But beetles are hard to kill. They're one of the hardest things to kill. Some of them you can get with what they call sticky traps. There's a real sticky yellow board, and most insects are attracted to the color yellow, and it's just simply like a glue trap. They're attracted to it. For some things, they have a little pheromone bait that you can actually put on there that draws in certain types of beetles. But again, it's strictly mechanical. There's nothing toxic about it. But that might be another thing for you to check, because beetles are remarkably resistant to most of the insecticides out there, especially in the adult stage. So I would spray periodically with the spinosad soap, knowing that that'll get the young ones, but it may or may not get the adults. The adults, again, you might look at sticky traps or use your little handheld vac, but you will get them under control. But they're not like some of the other things out there that are going to kill your tomato plants. They're just going to give you kind of ugly leaves. The nice thing about flea beetles, unlike the stink bugs, is they don't normally go after the fruit. They just go after the foliage. So of all the things that could be affecting your plants, flea beetles are one of the least of the problems.
Yeah. Well, stink bugs, my favorite method is to get a cup of soapy water and just hold it underneath and tap them and let them watch them drown. I love that.
Oh, yeah. Some of them fly off, though. The ones that don't fly, you can get that way, but I must have a smart breed of them out there, because mine tend to take off if I get too close to them. But, hey, if that's working for you, by all means do so. But I tried the same with the beetles, flea beetles.
Well, those things, they seem to just go so, they fly off so quickly that it's really hard to defeat them. So I do have some plants that seem to be outgrowing them, but some of the others, they just are so infested that I don't know if the plants are going to make it or not. But I'll keep at it.
And get your hose out. Just spray them down. Try to knock the beetles off. The plants should perk up when the weather does cool down a bit. Be sure you're keeping up with your fertilizing every couple of weeks with something like Has to Grow plant or something like that. But if the weather ever will become more fall-like, I think we'll see a great resurgence in the growth on those tomato plants.
Does the liquid seaweed and molasses, when it kind of helps toughen the leaves, does it make them any more resistant to the damage from these things?
Oh, absolutely. Seaweed and molasses, it toughens the leaf itself. That's why it's so good at reducing spider mite damage. And it will certainly give you some protection from them. But whereas the spider mites are a sort of a sucking insect, the beetles are a chewing insect. So it's not going to be quite the 100% cure, but it will definitely help, and it will definitely help your plants come back from the damage.
Okay. And one other quick question. I have... I've not been able to find the six packs of broccoli plants.
Right.
Hopefully I'll keep looking, including at Shades of Green. What's the latest I can get those in the ground once the nurseries do start carrying?
Well, I jokingly would say about 8 o'clock at night, because that's when it starts to get dark. But the broccoli typically will grow all winter long, unless we have just a bitterly cold winter. And it can be planted anytime, really, from, depending on weather, from 1st of September, all the way up until spring. The problem that we find is that a lot of the people producing the little plants are growing them in a warm greenhouse, and they're not real cold hardy. So if you wait, anything you get now, by all means, this is still a great time to be planting broccoli. But as we get into chillier weather, be sure that you harden them off a bit. If we've got a freeze forecast, don't run out and plant freshly purchased things. Keep them out in a shady spot. Let them get used to that cold slowly. And down to the upper teens, broccoli shouldn't have any problem with the San Antonio winter. So let's keep our fingers crossed. But you still got lots of good planting time on broccoli. Lots of good planting. Well, not really lots of time, because you need to get your Brussels sprouts in, just because they take so long to mature. Cauliflower is definitely not as cold hardy, and I'd have your cauliflower in within the next week or two. But broccoli is probably the hardiest of what we call the cold family plants, probably the hardiest. And normally we can pretty much plant it all winter.
All righty. Thanks a lot, Bob.
Always a pleasure. Thank you for the call, Sandy. John, hang on just a second. I need to get a break in here, and you will be up next. I get to talk about Green Grow Organics and Sam Sitterly. And I'm so happy to tell you about his new program, where kind of like these poison sprayers that want to come out and sign you up with some long-term contract and things like that. Don't even think about going for that. But Sam has a program where, on a quarterly basis, his good folks can do everything from fertilizing to rejuvenating. There's no contract involved here. But if you want to get into this program, what they offer you is nematodes applied as often as necessary, and actively aerated compost tea applied quarterly, micronutrients applied annually, mycorrhizal fungi added to all the liquids that they put out. It's just one of these complete service programs, but it's all organic and nothing toxic out there. Sam's motto is saving the planet one organic landscape at a time. And his credo is rejuvenating soils and humbly rehabilitating landscape owners so that they're really doing it right and having the success you're looking for. If you're looking for a good company to help you out with things, as well as just answering your questions about problems in the landscape, consider Green Grow Organics and Sam Sitterly. Go to their website, greengroworganics.com. give them a call, 210-599-5565. Be sure you understand all charges up front, but he's got thousands of satisfied people around. Sam Sitterly, Green Grow Organics.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 1071.
All right, back to gardening in a on a nice warm Saturday morning. Looks like we have a chance, a little bit improving weather situation the next week, but I'll believe it when I see it. Seems like they always give us a very optimistic forecast when it's still a week out, and then it just slowly goes away. But being the eternal optimist that I can, hopefully things are going to improve. I think John's the only person on the line, so we'll talk to him next. If you've got a question, you know how busy he gets later in the show, give me a call now, 210-599-5555. Well, I say good morning, John.
Good morning, Bob.
Morning, sir.
I'm going to be planting a garden, a first-time garden, for my daughter and son-in-law who live in Helotes. I'm in Pleasanton. I'm on sand. I'm not sure
right.
What kind of soil they have. I'm you know, not familiar. But I want to start in October, and I don't know what to start with. I think onions is a safe bet, but can I even find them?
No, probably be November.
What would you recommend?
If you want to start with one thing, let me back up a little bit. First of all, Helotes typically does not have very good soil, if they have any soil at all. You may want to consider constructing some sort of raised bed. I mean, it can be as simple as just a rock border, concrete blocks. It can be almost anything you can use, but without... Now, there are parts of Helotes, you know, if you're down on a creek bottom or somewhere like that, where you will have decent soil. But for the most part, Helotes soil is like most of the hill country, and that is just not very good. So assuming that, let's hope for the best. And if they seem to have reasonable, good, dark soil, then what you need to add is going to be compost and fertilizer and probably a little bit of azomite. Those are things that you'll need to get the soil really ready for planting. If they just have caliche, again, plan on creating a raised bed at least a foot deep. As far as timing, one thing that you can certainly plant in October that you will find in the nurseries now is garlic. Garlic's extremely easy to grow, extremely healthy, and has a lot of other uses in the garden. So garlic would be a good thing. As far as vegetables, you can certainly plant broccoli in October. You can usually plant cauliflower in October. You can plant cabbage. These are all things that you would set out as little plants. You can plant chard, Swiss chard. There are many different kinds. There's a beautiful one with multiple colors called Bright Lights, or there's some standard green chard, but they would do very well planted in October in most years. From seed, you can plant radishes and beets and carrots and turnips. All of those will go in October. And when it cools down, and it's not cool enough yet, but when it cools down, spinach is a great thing to grow, and you can plant it either from small plants or from seed. There are two different general kinds of spinach. One of them is what we call a Savoy, S-A-V-O-Y, a Savoy type that has very curled leaves. It's the most cold hardy, and it tends to last longer in the spring than any of the non-Savoy types. Non-Savoys tend to have flatter leaves. They give you a larger amount of spinach, and still very, very good tasting spinach, but they're not as cold hardy and they're not as heat tolerant. They're the first to go by the way in the spring. So I'm like the more Savoy type spinaches. One of my favorites is called Melody, but there's several other good ones out there. And kind of get with her and her family. And the most important thing is just, you know, grow something or help her grow something that her family will enjoy. I always like to tell the funny story. I was doing a vegetable gardening seminar one time, and this gentleman was in the seminar, and he said, "Man, can I grow radishes?" He said, "I grow 8 different types, and I must produce 1,000 radishes a year." And I said, "Well, sir, you must really like radishes." And he said, "No, I really can't stand them." And I said, "Well, why do you grow them?" He said, just because they're so easy and I can get so many of them. So, you know, again, find out what she and her family will enjoy eating. And there are things like radishes that are really easy to grow, but they're really all of the root crops can be planted in October. And if it cools down, spinach, things from plants, broccoli, cauliflower, cabbage. Brussels sprouts are a good crop. The two things about Brussels sprouts, first of all, they're very cold hardy. They will take temperatures down to zero normally without damage, but it takes a lot longer to produce. Whereas broccoli, you'll have heads that you can harvest and eat in 30 to 45 days, depending on the variety. With Brussels sprouts, it's probably over 100 days. So it's going to be spring before you're really harvesting Brussels sprouts. But and they do, the cooler the weather, the better they grow. If we have really a really warm winter, the little Brussels sprout heads will not be as tight. They'll still be tasty. But they're still not going to look like the ones you get in the grocery store. But those are all good things. Onions will be available most years in November, and onions do extremely well in the Holotus area. Around the first of the year, you'll start finding leek plants available, which grow just like onions, but of course leeks are much larger and, you know, totally different culinary uses, but you can grow beautiful leeks in that area as well. And like I say, October, great month for planting garlic. You can probably start planting some shallots. I think you'll probably find some shallots in the nurseries now, and they could certainly be planted as well.
Okay. Thank you, Bob.
And be sure and make that garden big enough. No garden's ever big enough, but if this lady really is into gardening, you're doing a great thing to get her. And if you have, you know, kids as well, it's a hobby that people can enjoy for the rest of their lives. So you enjoy, you call if you have any other questions. If you happen to be over our way, Shades of Green, we have a free handout I'd love to give you that we put together a number of years ago that tells you our recommended planting dates, both spring and fall, which ones to plant from seeds, which ones to plant from plants. It's absolutely free. I'd love to give you one. I think Fanix has a good one, too, if you're ever over in their part of town. They'd love to give you a good guide as well.
That's that colorful sheet, right, front and back? Because I think I have one.
We have one on tomatoes, and we have a separate one on vegetable gardening. So pick up a copy for her or make a copy of yours. And always, I appreciate your call. Look forward to helping you anytime.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You do the same, sir. Thank you. All right. It's going to be Nancy, Melissa, and Julie. Let me get a quick break in here so we don't get behind, and Nancy will be first in line. Looks like I get to talk to you about Rhonda's Nature's Way. And again, boy, talk about a person that I respect. Talk about somebody that has helped me for years that I will recommend very highly to you. Rhonda's Nature's Way is a health store and so much more. Rhonda has the very best when it comes to supplements, to vitamins, things that are good for you, always natural, always so much better than you're going to find in a grocery store or a chain pharmacy. And she has the knowledge to help you. There are natural products that help with everything from losing weight to mood issues, digestive issues, sleep issues, things you just don't want to be running to the doctor for some prescription medicine that you take over and over and over without seeing results. I tell you, Rhonda has helped me over the years with lots of different things, and I probably see her every couple of weeks for some of the different supplements I get from her. In this heat, I love the product called Ultima that she offers. That it's an electrolyte you mix with water, tastes absolutely wonderful, gives you the electrolytes you need without the sugars that you get in all the sports drinks. If you're dieting, let me tell you, there are things out there that will satisfy your sweet tooth and yet have no refined sugar in them. It's just, Rhonda's is a wonderful place to shop, and she and her staff are so knowledgeable to help you live better naturally. Store is over in the shopping center at the corner of I-10 and Callahan, kind of across the parking lot from Sprouts. Always closed on Sundays, but open Monday through Saturday. Please go see my friends at Rhonda's Nature's Way.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 107.1.
All right, back to gardening and back to the phone lines. Nancy's next in line. Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
I was wondering, you were just talking about the vegetables. Contender beans now and arugula now. Can I plant those or should I wait till the spring?
It's a gamble to plant beans, you know, this late. Contender is about a 45-day crop, if I remember right, which means that it's going to be the middle of November before you're going to be producing beans. And typically, we're getting a little bit cool by then. If you want a bean-like plant, snow peas is what I would plant because they can take, you know, pretty good deal of cold. When you start getting frost, that will damage the bloom so that the plants can go well below freezing without damage. So in lieu of beans, I would really suggest something like snow peas.
Okay, but arugula, I could go ahead and plant.
Arugula, you should be able to. Again, we're still getting into the 90s, which is just too blasted hot for September. And, of course, 2 days from now, we're into October. So if you can keep it well-watered, plant it now. If you have any doubts, wait a week or 10 days. We've still got lots of time to get arugula in the ground. Are you planning to grow it from seed or from little plants?
Seed.
I'd wait about a week before you plant your seed. The soil's just too hot. Get it ready. I mean, put your fertilizer down, put some compost on top, moisten that soil every day or two or three. But if you can believe the weathermen, don't get me started on that. It looks like toward the end of the week, we're going to be getting down to where the highs are probably not going to be getting out of the 70s. And at that point, it'll be a great time to plant arugula, time to plant parsley, time to plant cilantro. But I just don't want to see 90-degree temperatures when we're planting leafy greens.
Yeah, it's kind of in part shade, so it may be it's in just a big pot, so it may be an okay place for right now.
Yeah, you should be okay. Yeah, plant it in a pot, and you can always keep it in the shade until we get past the bitterly hot weather and then get it out in the sun. It'll grow better in the sun, but we nothing at all wrong with starting it in the shade and then moving that pot out when it cools off a little.
And also, my Mexican mint marigold looks terrible. Should I cut that down along with the Henry Dolberg sage? I don't know. I think after a couple of years, those just don't do very well. So probably dig those up and start over again.
Well, I wouldn't be planting Henry Dolberg sage at this time of the year. I would fertilize it pretty heavily, liquid fertilizer like Has to Grow or the liquid fish blend. And we're the Henry Dolberg and most all of these are all hybrids of something called Salvia farinacea. And they just suffer from the heat this summer. They tend to really perk up in the fall. So I'm not going to give up on the Dolberg sage yet. But, now what was the other one you mentioned?
Mexican mint marigold.
Mexican mint marigold, which is basically, it's just a perennial marigold. When you look at the plants, what looks bad? Is it the older leaves? Is it the newer leaves? Is it the whole plant?
Older leaves. They're just all brown. I
wouldn't cut it back yet because, it's just about to come into bloom. That's one of the reasons, of course, you know, it's a tarragon substitute is why we grow it. But you're going to miss out on a lot of beautiful yellow flowers if you cut it back this time of year. I would, again, tend to fertilize it, water it. You'll still be able to harvest a new growth if you're using it in the kitchen. But if you cut it back, it's not going to have time to come out and bloom like it should. And it's just basically a perennial marigold. I would feed it. I would mulch it. If it was the 1st of September, I'd probably, you know, cut it back. But here we are, the end of September. I think I'd wait till when it normally freezes down in the winter to cut it all the way back.
Okay, because I already see the little blooms on it. So.
Yeah, no, let them bloom and enjoy them.
And another question, I've been trying to make little plants from the seeds from red bird paradise. What is the difference between a yellow bird in paradise and red bird of paradise as far as, you know, care for them? Is it basically the same thing except for the flowers, color of the flowers?
Tell me, now what we're calling bird of paradise is the one that has the little small leaves come out kind of those Cecilipinia. The red one or red orange one is going to be, it's going to have a little bit smoother stem. The yellow one is actually kind of a yellow and green combination. I think that the orange red one is always going to freeze down to the ground. Mine has always come back, even in Bernie. The native one, which is that kind of pink and green and yellow flower, maybe a little bit more cold hardy, but the care is basically the same. But if you're looking for bright colors, the orange and yellow one, the one they call Pride of Barbados, is going to be the most colorful. The other's very, very interesting, and I wish more people grew it.
Yeah, those I didn't really know the difference. And also, I've been trying to make new plants propagate from seeds, and I scar them and everything and put them in Garrett juice and then plant them, and I have luck with some and some I don't, and
that's the way that plant is.
Okay, so pretty much the yellow one, the native one, you can do that also.
Yeah, grow it exactly the same way. The yellow one will also take a little bit more shade and still bloom, whereas the orange-red one has to be in absolute full sun. But, just don't confuse them with the tropical bird of paradise, which is a whole different plant called Strelitzia, not cold hardy. But, yeah, what you have is botanically called Cecilipinia, and they're some of the best, easiest, most successful plants you'll grow in our part of the country.
Yeah, the orange-red is just beautiful this time of year. You can't beat it. So.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, and one other question, the firecracker. I love that plant. It just keeps blooming like crazy. Do you have to fertilize that plant?
It'll bloom better if you do feed it with a good organic fertilizer. Again, most plants like that, I like a liquid rather than dry, or if you use a dry fertilizer, then, follow it up with a little liquid as well. They're not totally cold hardy, so if we're going to get down below the middle 20s, you'll probably want to cover it. Now, it's another one. There's an orange form and there's a yellow form. The orange, I think, is much prettier. There's a large leaf form and a small leaf form. The hummingbirds love them all. They're all beautiful, but just be aware they're not completely cold hardy if we have a cold winter.
Okay, I just mulch the trunk really well.
Yeah.
I cut them back, and then they come back. So
yes, ma'am. You're doing it right.
Okay. Thank you, Bob.
You're welcome, Nancy. Thank you. Next in line is Melissa. Good morning, Melissa.
Well, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. I live in Parker County, which is in Zone 8, and I'm trying to cover 200 feet of my property line so I don't hear the noise from the road and a little bit of privacy.
Okay.
And I did have the power company just recently came in and put in new poles, and what I had growing there, they just destroyed everything.
Yeah.
I had redbud trees and their trucks idling there. I guess the fumes probably killed all my trees and what they didn't run over. But anyway, I need to plant trees, shrubs that I can plant underneath the power line that
won't get
grow
too tall. Yeah. And do you want them to be evergreen, or do you mind if they drop their leaves like the redbuds did?
A mixture would be fine.
Okay. And tell me a little bit more where Parker County is. I don't know Parker County.
I'm in Weatherford, which is just...
Okay. I know Weatherford. Weatherford. And I just wanted to know a little bit about your soil type. One of the prettiest evergreen shrubs you can plant is called Pride of Houston Yaupon, Yaupon, Yaupon holly. It's going to be cold hardy. It's going to give you beautiful red berries in the winter months. And birds love it. It's deer resistant. Pride of Houston Yule Pond is just an outstanding plant. It's going to grow up to 8 feet tall, but it's maybe even a little taller, but it's never going to be getting up in the power lines or causing problems. There is a plant called Possum Haw Holly that is very much like the Yule Pond, except it drops its leaves in the winter. And depending on the variety you get, it just covers itself with berries, either red or orange. And it's just, again, a super, super hardy plant. It will grow very, very easily for you. There is a plant, a flowering plant called Abelia. You would want to get the standard form, which is going to grow 5 or 6 feet tall. But it's going to give you white blooms all summer long, drought tolerant, just an excellent plant to mix in there. There are many varieties of crepe myrtles that never get real tall. There are crepe myrtles that only grow 6 or 7 feet. You would never want to plant the real tall ones under the power lines, but there's a long list of lots of different colors, some of which stop, you know, very short. Many of my favorites get, you know, maybe 4 to 6 feet in tall, 4 to 6 feet tall. Some of them have funny names. There's one called Pocomoki. But you can find almost every color of crepe myrtle, which, of course, is going to drop its leaves in the winter months. There is a beautiful shrub in the hibiscus family called Alphea, also known as Rose of Sharon, which will grow very well in your area. Totally cold-hardy, lots of flowers spring and fall. Looks something like hibiscus flowers. Oh, golly, I can go, you know, on and on. There's a plant called Flowering Quince that will give you lots of spring color, and there are varieties that, you know, stay low, varieties that grow taller. There's a plant called Laura Petalum. The ones that do best in your area are going to be the purple leaf form, but Laura Petalum, are also called Chinese fringe flower, would be beautiful in kind of a mixed border like that. I can keep going, but those are a few that... That I would suggest to you that are going to be cold hardy, are going to be drought tolerant once they're established. And there are also some Nandinas, give you beautiful fall color, then they just turn back green, they don't ever drop their leaves. But the old standard one that they call Heavenly Bamboo will get up to 8 feet tall. My favorites are what they call the compact varieties, not that don't ever get the real wavy leafed one, but the flatter leafed ones that they just simply call Nandina compacta, those are going to be very hardy. If they're in the sun, the leaves turn just brilliant burgundy to red colors, and then green again in the spring. But that's one of the hardiest plants you can plant that would work well. And this is going to be a lot of fun. If your soil is lacking, berm it up a little bit. Go ahead and create sort of a mound, maybe a foot higher, not a whole lot higher, but then you can plant some perennials along in front to look at. Salvia greggii will be a good evergreen choice. You can plant skullcap. There are probably 50 different perennials could go in there, but that'll give you a good start at some of the plants that are going to do really well for you.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, I'm writing as fast as I can here.
I wish I could slow down, but I have to keep getting these commercials in here. So any other questions, or are you welcome to call
me? One last that's related to them on my neighbor's property. The trucks uh-huh. drove through their front yard, and so now there's ruts all in their yard.
Uh-huh.
How is the best way to level that back out?
I would use a mixture of sand and compost. It'll probably be sold by your material yards as what they call top dressing or lawn dressing. If the ruts are shallow, an inch or two, just use compost alone. If they're deeper ruts, then that mixture of sand and compost would work really well in the Weatherford area.
Okay, sounds great. I appreciate it. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you. Goodbye. All right, Julie, hang on. Got to get my last break of the hour in, and you will be next. Looks like I get to talk to you about Fanix Nursery and Garden Center, and always a pleasure. Only about 90 years. They've been sitting over there on Home Green Road offering you good quality knowledge along with some of the best plants you'll find. They've got lots and lots of fall veggies in right now. They just got their shipment of New citrus trees, just about all the different varieties. They've got garlic and shallots by the pound. They, of course, have lots of plants that qualify for the SAWS Water Saver Rebate Program that can go in right now. And, of course, they've still got the big sale going on. Bougainvilleas, figs, hibiscus, and bananas, all those are 30% off the usual prices. Plumerias are 20% off. Keep in mind, too, that Fanix is more than a nursery. They've got that good eco lithium-ion battery-powered outdoor equipment. They've got Traeger grills and all the accessories. Lots of reasons to go see Fanix. They're open every day over on Home Green Road. Check out their website for more information at Fanix, F-A-N-I-C-K, FanixNursery.com.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster. News Talk 550, KTSA, and FM 107.1.
All right, back to gardening. Julie is next in line. Julie, if we run short on time, I'll get Don to put you on hold and we'll continue after the news, but let's get started. Good morning.
Good morning. I have a quick question, so maybe we can get it in, but this is the time I start bringing in all my my indoor plants that I've put out for the summer.
Yes, ma'am.
And bringing them back in, but I noticed that the ants are, I'm having a very difficult time with ants, and I don't necessarily want to bring them in the house, but they've got to come in.
Mix up some spinosad or spinosad soap. It is a very, very good ant killer, and it will not be harmful to the roots. Outdoors, we might be thinking about a little bit of orange oil and water, but you have to be very careful. You don't get it too strong.
Yeah,
but the spinosad is totally safe for the plants. It's harmless to people and pets. So that's what I would
water it into the soil.
Yeah.
Or just spray.
I would water it into the soil. I'd mix it up in your watering can while your plants are still outside and just, you know, saturate the pots thoroughly with it. The ants are all the ants we have, you know, they make their nest, their mound, so to speak, down in the soil. So that's what, you know, I would do. You might also just throw out around the area where you have them, put out a little bit of this bait called Come and Get It. And in case you do have, you know, mounds in the ground out in the area where your house plants are. But the plants themselves, if you'll just, you know, drench them with the spinosad, that'll take care of the pill bugs, the millipedes, and other things as well as
earwigs. Would that help?
Yes, it'll control them as well.
Okay. All right, that was my main thing, but I just want to tell you, in Oklahoma, it's been just like it has been in Texas, and I am having a second spring. I have things that are in bloom, and it's really odd.
Well, I tell you what, Julie, I'd like to tell you just a couple more things that will be important, but let's do news, and we'll come back and talk just a little bit more right here on KTSA Radio, San Antonio, Texas.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. Talk to Bob now, 210-599-5555.
All right, let's get back to gardening. A couple of open lines. You just heard that number. We're going to talk a little more with Julie and then Matt and then you, 210-599-5555. Julie, with the problem that I worry about, especially with you being substantially north of where we are, is that in some ways it seems great having this re-burst of growth and blooming and all, but unfortunately in Oklahoma, as you well know, sometimes it gets cold very quickly. I would be on a weekly or every 2 week schedule. I'd really be spraying that seaweed out there because that's going to help make things more cold hardy. And, of course, y'all have been dry just like we have, and you already know the importance of watering before a hard freeze.
Yeah.
But liquid seaweed will typically, it adds several degrees, sometimes up to even 10 degrees extra protection. And the sad thing is that the winter may arrive without a chance for the plants to harden off. So I think that's going to be a real good thing to do. If you haven't fertilized in the past 90 days, I would fertilize as well because that, believe it or not, that also adds cold hardiness. This late, it's not likely to really contribute any more to the growth, because it takes a little while for the microbes in the soil to, in effect, process the fertilizer and make it available to the plants. But we just get concerned about this sudden burst of late season growth, because it's just not gonna have a lot of time to harden off. If it's a typical year, I never use word normal when I talk about weather, but as gardeners, Mother Nature hadn't been too kind to us the past couple of years, but hopefully, the Farmer's Almanac, they're wrong about 20% of the time, and I hope this is one of the years they are.
Okay, and we have a little oak tree that someone brought us from New Orleans, and it's growing. It looks, it's really full and everything. Should I spray that with, and this is its first year.
Oh, absolutely.
Also, I have a Pride of Barbados that is first year, and it didn't bloom real well, I think mainly because of the heat, and it was its first year. But it's 5 feet tall.
Oh, yeah.
And it's really tall, but no blooms. And
well,
so should I go ahead and spray that down too?
I don't think it would be a good general thing to do, but your Pride of Barbados is going to freeze to the ground every winter.
Okay.
I would, right. I would have I 6 inches. That. Yeah, I'd have 6 inches of mulch over it.
Okay.
I'm north of San Antonio, and mine's come back every year. But you're borderline as far as the winter might actually kill it. If you put several inches of mulch over it, I'm virtually certain it will come back. And long as it's getting full sun, you should have lots more flowers next year. Liquid seaweed would be great, but the mulch is going to be the most important with that particular plant.
And what about with the little oak tree?
And is it a live oak, or what kind of oak is it?
I don't know. It just came out of their yard, and it's real healthy. It's just I don't know what kind it is. I don't know.
Well,
I don't think we have oak wilt here, though.
Oh, no. I doubt that is much of an issue. Cold hardiness is an issue, and it's just going to be wait and see. I definitely would use the liquid seaweed on it, but New Orleans, of course, is a long ways different from Oklahoma when it comes to winter times things, and unfortunately lots of the oaks that are grown down in that area are not going to take an Oklahoma winter very well. So use your seaweed, keep it watered, give it a shot, but don't blame yourself if it can't take the colder weather.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, and you have a great weekend.
Well, and you do the same. It's always a pleasure visiting with you. Thank you.
Goodbye.
All right, next in line is Matt. Good morning, Matt.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
I'm off to a good start, just tolerating the heat. I was blessed to get away for a little relaxation in a cooler climate for the past week, but glad to be back home again.
I hear you. This is my first time calling in, so I might be a little nervous, but I got a really simple question. I have about a quarter of an acre corner lot over in the northwest side of San Antonio. I got large oaks in my front yard, and somehow I've been lucky to get rid of the St. Augustine, and I was able to see Bermuda this year, and it grew good. My question is it too late to fertilize for the fall and winter?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. It's a great time to fertilize. Be sure you stay with something organic, because it doesn't have to be watered in. I would water it in when you can, because it doesn't really go to work until it gets water. But feeding this time of year is going to strengthen the root system. Bermuda is, probably our hardiest grass, but you've got plenty of time, and the root system to some extent will stay active all winter. So, yes, fertilizing with Medina or Maestro Grow or Nature's Creation, all those companies make really good organic products, and I'd feed your new Bermuda grass as well as, trees and shrubs and everything. The one thing to be prepared for is that your Bermuda's not going to do well under the shade of those oaks. Out in the sun, it's going to be, the prettiest and hardiest thing around. But you're going to find it's going to be a little thin. If you're looking to have some green grass out there for the winter months, especially if you have areas where your Bermuda's not thick, you can, I'd probably wait a couple of weeks, but you can overseed with one of what they call the perennial rye. They're not perennial in this area. They'll last into the summer, and then when it gets real hot, they will die out. But if you're looking for, you know, beautiful green in the winter months, the so-called perennial rye, my favorite variety is called Top Flite, T-O-P-F-L-I-T-E. And if it's important to you to, you know, have some green grass, you mm-hmm. can plant that. And then in the spring, you can consider whether you want to go to the trouble of a more shade-tolerant grass, whether you want to put in a good ground cover, whether you want to create some beds of shade-tolerant perennials. You can have lots of fun and lots of different choices. But your basic question, yes, it's a great time to fertilize. And how long has it been since you planted your seed? How well established is it?
I did it earlier this, I think, late February, early March.
Oh, okay, and, yeah.
They're in the shaded areas. They didn't do so well, but it's there. It's kind of blotchy. And then where the direct sunlight, it's thick. It's real thick.
Well, if it's in the budget and if it's in your time and energy frame, one of the best possible things you could do would be to put between a quarter and a half an inch of compost over as much of that area as you can. It's the greatest suppressant of weeds. It's a natural pre-emergent. It just puts so much life as well as so many things like humic acids and all into the soil. Ideally, put your fertilizer down first and then, you know, top dress as much of that grass as you can, with any of the good compost products. I personally don't care for the biosolids products, not because they're mm-hmm. human sewage sludge, but our waste stream today has so many chemicals, so many pharmaceuticals, so much really bad stuff that I just, you know, choose not to use the biosolids, but a good manure-based compost is going to be the greatest thing you can do for that grass.
So is it okay to put compost down this time of the year?
Absolutely. In my opinion, this is the best time of year to put it down, and not just for your benefit, but people fighting sticker burrs. Several years ago, I had a sticker burr patch that was so bad the dogs wouldn't walk into the area, and I did nothing except put down maybe half an inch of compost in that area. The next mm-hmm. year, I probably pulled 4 sticker burrs out of that entire area, and this is an area we used to play a lot of croquet in. So it's probably about 30 feet wide and about 80 feet long, and totally eliminated the burrs and totally eliminated most other weeds and strongest, greenest. It also makes your grass more drought tolerant. So, but it is a lot of work to put it down, and you'll spend some money doing it, but that would be the best thing you could do for that year-old Bermuda grass.
Yeah, I was going to do that during the spring, but I didn't know if we can do that now. So let me ask you, I'm not very good with terminology. You know, you're very kind with your words, you know, or knowledgeable. But compost, I could use topsoil, and compost is the same thing, correct?
It
sounds like a stupid thing. No?
No, sir. That's a very good question. But you don't want to really be putting any topsoil. There's absolutely no reason to put topsoil on top of grass unless you have a severe problem that you want to level it. It does nothing but create mud and get the soil level up where, you know, it all runs out onto your sidewalks and things like that. Compost is, on the other hand, it's decaying organic material. And their compost frequently is manure-based. If it's very crude material, if it's material that's recently been just chipped up with leaves and bark and, you know, tree limbs, things like that, we would call that a mulch, and we use a lot of that in our flower beds. As the process continues and it decomposes further and further, it goes from being a mulch-type material to a compost-type material. I don't like mulch on the grass because it's hard to mow over it, and it hasn't broken down to the point that it's really putting all the nutrients back into the soil. So, and stop by, you said you're in Helotes. What area are you in?
Yeah, close to Helotes, 1604 in Bandera area.
Yeah, you've got 2 or 3 good material yards out that way, and tell them you just want to go by and take a look at it, and you know, stick your hand in it. If it feels really warm, it's still breaking down, and you'll want to water it after you put it on your grass. If it feels much cooler to the touch, it's probably going to be pretty warm. Then no need to follow it up with watering. And it's not going to hurt your grass in any way. But while it's still breaking down, it's releasing a lot of compounds that we call it volatilizing. They just turn to gas and go away, ammonia and things like that, that you really would rather have them in the soil. So if you get a warm compost product, watering it is going to push a lot more of the nutrient material down in the soil before anything else happens to it. But adding compost, you can do it spring or fall. If you're, you know, out to win yard of the month, I'd tell you to put it on twice a year. Realistically, on a new yard, it'll be real good. In the future, if you can do it every 2 or 3 years, you'll have the greenest, most maintenance-free yard in the neighborhood.
All right. Well, I appreciate your time and your knowledge.
Well, see, there wasn't that easy. You don't have to be nervous about this. I hope you'll call me anytime you have a question. I'm always here to help you.
Oh, trust me, I'll do it more often now. Thank you.
You're welcome, Matt. Thank you, sir. Goodbye. All right, guess we better get a break in here, kind of shift gears a little bit. I get to talk to you about Southwest Metal Roofing Systems, but I love talking about that. And gardeners, well, it gives you peace of mind. Maybe roofs don't have a lot to do with your landscape, but I'll tell you one thing for sure. When you put a Southwest Metal Roofing Systems roof on your home, it'll be the last roof you put on. You won't be worried a year, 2, 5 years from now about having to replace a shingle roof. And those roofers are really known for tearing up landscapes and things. So get that roof that's going to last the life of your house, and you'll never have to worry about replacing it. They give you the best warranty in the industry. Their roofs are super energy efficient. They'll save you money on your utility bills every month. Most insurance companies will give you a discount on your homeowner's insurance because you have a Southwest Metal Roofing Systems roof on your home. There's so many reasons that I recommend them. I've had one of the roofs on my home for probably over 20 years. Never called them with a single problem. And my roof was complex, 3 chimneys and a balcony around 3 sides upstairs, lots of flashing, never a single problem. Here at the nursery, we've had the roof on probably 15 years from Southwest Metal Roofing Systems, stood up to baseball-size hail. It's just quality you won't believe. Lots of choices in styles and colors, very reasonably priced, and truly the last roof you'll ever put on your home. If you're building a new home, they put on new roofs as well as roof replacements. If you want the best roof out there, just remember Southwest Metal Roofing Systems. Give them a call at 210-822-6868, 210-822-6868 for Southwest Metal Roofing Systems.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 107.1.
All right, back to gardening. Everybody seems a little slow waking up this morning. More empty lines or open lines than I usually have. So if you've got that question, give me a call. Michael's up next, but love to have you in line right after that. 210-599-5555. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Appreciate
well, thank you for calling. I appreciate that. How can I help today?
I've heard several calls on compost, and I've been looking to do the same on my yard.
Yes, sir.
And I'm trying to find a place that has great compost by the bulk near Divine. Do you know of any? I know there, I thought I saw heard of a place in Castroville.
There is a good place in Castroville, but I tell you, Fred Morales at Morales Feed down your way, Fred in the past has carried a good quality compost, and he would probably be the closest place to you, and plus just a heck of a nice guy. Fred's been down there for a lot of years, so that would be the first place I would call. The folks in Castroville have a very good compost, but they're just a little further away from you.
Right. Yeah, I called the Morales Feed because I wanted to get more information on their compost.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I got the information wrong from them, but the lady told me that they get their compost from Saul's.
Well, and
so I don't know if that has a lot of bio.
Unfortunately, you know. It does. In the past, Fred has carried two products. He's carried the biosolids based, which for putting on agricultural land and things like that. Right. I don't have any problem with that, but it's not something I would put on your yard. I know at one point he was carrying both kinds, and I would, next time I see him, I'll check with him, and I will certainly encourage him to do so. But no, his biosolids product for pastures and all is great, but if that's all they're offering, it's worth going to Castroville. You might also, there is a company that they're not based here, which may be a little suspicious at first, but they're a big company called Site, S-I-T-E, Site One, that has opened, or they bought all the old Stone and Soil Depot locations, and they have you know, they've spread their umbrella pretty widely, and they have in the past had a good quality manure-based compost. So you might, and I'm sure you can call any of their locations and ask if they have one that would be close to you, because I think they've done a pretty good job. But Jeff Nice, who owns Stone and Soil, did probably the best job of anybody, you know, even Malcolm Beck. I think I like Jeff's products a little better than Malcolm's when Malcolm was alive. But I think Site One's done a pretty good job of following the tradition that he started. And so call Site One and ask if they have somebody down in your area. But like I say, your folks over in Castroville do a great job with theirs as well. I don't know what their delivery capabilities are, and that's going to be probably the biggest question.
Yes, sir. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Well, I appreciate you do the same, Michael. I appreciate the call. Thank you, sir. Goodbye. All right, Shanna and Wanda are going to be my next two callers, and let's see here. Shanna's first in line. Good morning, Shanna.
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
Where do you find that? Where can I buy the top flight rye?
Most any nursery should have it. It's going to be about 2 weeks before it's available. But there is a local distributor on it, and I would just, you know, I would just call around. Just any nursery around can get it. We haven't gotten ours in, but I think we're looking at probably about 2 weeks here going to be offering delivery. But just about any good nursery should have it. It is a little more expensive than the old common Oregon rye, but boy, I'd never put Oregon rye on my yard. It gets so thick and it's so waterlogged you can't mow it. It tries to grow 8 inches tall. The nice thing about top flight is that it stays low and compact and lasts much later into the spring and early summer. So call around, and I will, like I said, I just got back in town from actually a little vacation for the first time in a while, and I'll do some checking. I'll try to do before tomorrow. I'll try to find out for sure when it's going to be available from the suppliers and when you'll start seeing it available to buy.
Okay, because I'm not sure I'm going to have any grass next year. So,
boy, isn't that the truth? This has been a difficult year on yards. But again, if it's in the budget and in the energy budget as well, compost is going to be the best thing folks can do for their yard. Put down a little fertilizer, put some compost on. And if you want a top dress with something to give you a prettier green yard than you've had, provided you can water it, the top flight rye will sure do that. It grows in shade or in sun. It gets a little taller in the shade, but it's a quality product.
Yeah, the water might be the issue. I'm in Kendall County, so, you know.
Oh, you and me both. It's but, you know, a small area, it's kind of like St. Augustine. Everybody badmouths St. Augustine, and I say there's nothing wrong with St. Augustine. Most people just plant too much of it, and that goes for grass in general. I don't think anybody these days should have grass, you know, fence to fence, but don't let anybody, you know, badmouth you for planting a little bit of whatever grass you like. And I wouldn't plant an acre of any kind of grass, but the top flight is beautiful, and if you choose to do a small area, then I say go for it. It's hopefully, you know, wells are not in great shape. We'll have another meeting here a week from Tuesday and get to take a look at all the well levels around. But just a moderate area. I mean, you can always collect gray water. You can always collect rainwater. There are ways to get some additional water, and hopefully we'll get some rain before too long.
That's what I'm hoping for. I'm very conservative, and I collect everything I can.
Well, you're doing it right. You're doing it right, Shanna.
Well, I have one kind of off-topic question that you talked about with Dr. Kirby.
And yes, uh-huh.
Not the deer antlers. But uh-huh. There was one antler that's better than the other.
This is personal experience from somebody who's, had labs in Goldens for many years. For a long time, we bought from some of the pet supply places moose antlers. And since that time, I have found that the axis deer antler, white tail antlers, boy, the dogs can chew them up in an afternoon. But the axis antlers are very long-lasting. It would take our puppies a couple of years to really chew them up. Dr. Kirby says that the dog's saliva softens them to the point that they're not bad for the dog's teeth. So if you know anyone that hunts, again, the axis antlers, they're very, very durable and, shall we say, very, very popular with the dogs.
Okay, great. Okay, I just want to make sure I have one, but it's years. I mean, I've had it for years, mm-hmm. and I wanted to get new. I don't even know what it is. I don't even know where I got it.
Well, just, keep an eye on the dogs. When it starts getting chewed down, take it away and get a new one. But, again, hunting season's coming up. I have neighbors that actually the axis shed their antlers every year, just as whitetails do. And they call those antlers sheds, by the way. But if you can find anyone that has axis antlers, cut them down to about 8 inches long. Good, same sort of saw you would probably cut brick with. But, wipe off the trimmings, and your dogs will love you for it. And like I say, we've got some of them that are several years old and still in good shape. So know anybody that hunts, tell them you're looking for some axis antlers.
Okay, so if I find one out in the woods, how would I know if it's axis or whitetail antlers?
The whitetail antlers will typically be branched. The axis antlers tend to be much longer, and they may branch, but whitetail antlers going to usually have a lot of curve to it. Axis antlers are much larger, which means individual sections of them are much straighter. If in doubt, take it by any sporting goods store, or I'm sure you've got friends that hunt. It's just you won't mistake one for the other once you've seen them both.
Okay, great. Thank you for all the information.
My pleasure, Shanna. Thank you for the call this morning. Okay, goodbye. Don, let's get a break in here. We'll be right back and start with Wanda.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 107.1.
All right, back to gardening. My next two callers are going to be Wanda and Joe. Let me tell you one more thing here before we get too far along. Howard Garrett is not going to be with us today. He's on an airplane coming back home from going off to see his kids. So we will continue to take calls through the 8 o'clock hour, where we normally take 30 minutes or so to visit with the dirt doctor. But sorry to get that text from him last night, but he's been out in Arizona enjoying a little bit of a vacation, too. So we'll be back to having Howard with us next weekend, but just gonna have more time for calls this weekend. Next two callers are Wanda and Joe, and Wanda is first in line. Good morning, Wanda.
Hey, need your advice on something I've heard you talk about a lot. But
okay,
we have put in a new flower bed, or we had a reputable landscaping company put it in, and among all the plants, we have two crepe myrtles, and I've heard you talk about that so much. But in all the other plants, and thinking they're reputable, we didn't really check the buildup of the soil around the trunk until we saw the leaves now at the tip of the each of the leaves, they start getting brown, and then we realize, well, let's look at the trunk. Yeah, so we pulled it back about a foot away from the tree, but it's continuing. Now the leaves are about half of it is brown. Mm-hmm. Another thing, because I guess this was put in July, all these plants, and some are, the majority are really thriving. I mean, they've been beautiful. But the water is set up for once a day. And I'm thinking maybe, is it maybe too much water for the crepe myrtle?
Oh, it's way more than you need. Now, having brown tips on the leaves can be caused by a lot of different things. It can be caused by lack of water. It can be caused from the heat. It can be caused from having super hot soil. And keep in mind that your crepe myrtles are going to drop all their leaves here in another month or so anyway. So this is not panic time by any means. Now, did you get the soil pulled back away from the trunks down to where you see the major roots starting to flare out?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, how far out do I go? A foot or...
The only thing you really have to do is be sure that you continue to get good air circulation, you know, around the trunks of the crepe myrtles. It can be an inch, it can be 10 feet. Sometimes, and I've seen places where people had to, more on big trees and things where the developer leveled the lot and filled 4 feet of soil around them. If you had to go a long way down, you can build a little silo around it and then fill dirt, but the distance doesn't matter. All that matters is that you have air circulation around the trunk and those flaring out roots. And so I tell people just make it wide enough, slope it up to where it's not going to just refill back in, but just do whatever's convenient for you. If you had to go way down, well, you may want to use rock or something like that and create just, you know, a little well around your trunks on those. But the proper way to water is not daily. Sprinkler system companies do that all the time. But you want to be sure that when you water very, very thoroughly, and then you don't water until the soil's dry an inch or so deep. And even in the hottest, driest weather, that should not probably be more than once a week for most landscapes. So that sprinkler system needs to run long enough to put out about an inch and a half of water. And you'll just have to put out some little straight-sided containers and time how long that takes. But you'll do more good with one thorough deep watering than with, six or eight very shallow waterings on everything in the landscape.
Sure. It's a little difficult if you have it all around your home. Some parts of it is shaded, and these crepe myrtles are directly in the sun.
As they should be.
At least half of the day. And then there is a little rock border, but I'm thinking it just may be the heat this summer. We did have some other plants that, well, we had some nandinas, and they're easy to grow normally.
Right.
I mean, where there may be a very healthy nandina, the one next to it just totally died. So I'm not sure if that, but then the soil is always moist. So it's not the matter of not getting moisture, but it may be too much moisture again. And just like you said, just do it every other day or.
Certainly not every day. The problem that we see a lot is that, you know, it's the soil feels moist up on the surface, but right now throughout the area, what we call the subsoil area, the area from maybe a foot down to 6 or 8 feet down, has gotten so dry that down there where the plant's roots are, there's just not much moisture. There's plenty up toward the surface of the ground because it's getting watered frequently, but I'm sure you watched them plant those plants, and, you know, the root system is, you know, 12 to 18 inches down. So to really tell how dry it is, you'd almost have to dig down that deeply to see. And there are an awful lot of areas around where, you know, it's nice and moist up on top, but down where the roots of the trees or the bigger shrubs and things like that are, it's desperately dry. But if the problem were too much water, I think you'd see totally different symptoms. Water doesn't hurt anything, but when it's something, say, so wet that the moisture drives all the oxygen out of the soil, this is what kills plants. The roots have to have oxygen to them. So, but I challenge you to find a lawn anywhere or a landscape anywhere in San Antonio that doesn't have some plants with brown tips on the leaves. And at this point, I'm going to tell you, you know, don't panic, especially on a crepe myrtle, which is going to lose all of its leaves in about 30 days anyway.
Right. Correct. Well, thank you very much.
Well, you're certainly welcome. And how long has your new landscape been planted?
Probably, I think, July.
Okay. Anytime you have the time and energy, take your hose, just put your thumb over the end of it, and go out and just spray down the top of those plants, because they'll absorb a lot of moisture directly through their bark while they're getting their roots established. And this will help them a great deal. And on the Nandinas, did you get the variety that has the flatter leaves, or do they have sort of a curly leaf?
It's a flatter leaf, and now
good.
It's getting into the reddish-purple color.
Well, that's good. Those are the ones that do well here. There's a variety of dwarf Nandina they call a purple dwarf, which has those curlier leaves that does horribly here. If you have real deep soil, it's okay. But the flatter leaf kinds, I'm with you, are some of the best and hardiest plants out there. Whenever I see, you know, a row of plants and one or two are having problems and the others aren't, always go out and check the water system, whether it's drip or whether it's a sprinkler system, by putting out some little straight-sided dishes, and be sure they're all getting a similar amount of water, because unfortunately, I see an awful lot of sprinkler systems where you've got one point that's getting nice deep watering. You move 2 feet away, it's not getting hit by the sprinkler, and it is much, much drier. So plant like a Nandina. They're tough plants. They shouldn't be folding up and dying. If one's doing well, they should all be doing.
It's an in-ground system, so I can't see how much water it's getting, so I just feel the soil.
Uh-huh.
I do have another question, and I know you've covered this, and I now that I'm needing to put up a shrub about 5 foot tall, maybe 4 to 6 foot, to hide the big electrical box out in the backyard. What type of shrub, shrub that you wouldn't see this?
Shade or sunny area?
It's all sun.
Golly, there are so many choices. Again, Nandina would be a good choice, what they call the compact form, which actually grows to about 5 feet. There is a plant called Abelia, A-B-E-L-I-A. In this case, I probably would get what they call the compact form. It's going to grow 4 feet taller, give you beautiful white flowers all summer long, and it remains evergreen. If you want something that's just going to go wild, there's a plant called primrose jasmine, and has yellow flowers in the spring, and it'll try to take over your yard, but it is so hardy, and it is many times used for screening electrical boxes and things like that. But probably, those are all good. There is a type of viburnum that is called viburnum suspensum, or its common name is, and who knows where this comes from, it's called Sandanqua, S-A-N-D-A-N-K-W-A. Sandanqua viburnum is a super hardy plant, totally deer resistant, grows about 5 feet tall, and dependably evergreen. That would be another. If you want, and if you have good soil, sounds like you have pretty good soil, if you want more of a true holly look, you could plant dwarf Burford holly. It's going to get about 5 feet tall and make a nice screen. And if you want something that has pretty red berries in the winter other than Nandina, the Pride of Houston Yaupon holly, you'll trim it once a year to keep it down to, 5-6 feet in height. But it's one of the hardiest evergreen, pretty red berries, just virtually nothing ever goes wrong with Pride of Houston Yaupon. So you've got a lot of choices for screening off that box.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
I appreciate the call this morning. You have a wonderful weekend.
All right. Thank you.
Don, I guess we better get our last break of the hour in here, and Joe will be up first when we come back.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 107.1.
All right, Joe and Judy are my next two callers. Remember, as I said, Howard Garrett is out of town. He's actually probably on a plane about now this morning. So we won't have our usual interview with the Dirt Doctor at 8, so we're just going to keep on going with phone calls. So get in line if you'd like. Joe is up first. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Bob. Love your program, buddy.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. I love being here.
Yep. Hey, I've got some problems at my daughter's house. In the backyard, she's got these huge oak trees, and we had St. Augustine planted back there, but the last two winters have been extremely hard.
Yes, sir.
And all the grass just gave up, died out, and I don't know if the weather or if something attacked it or whatever. But I'm looking at putting St. Augustine back in the backyard because of the shade trees,
mm-hmm.
and I need to know what is the best variety to put in.
Well, there are two varieties that are good for shade. One of them is called Palmetto, P-A-L-M-E-T-T-O. The other one is called Delmar, D-E-L-M-A-R. And the problem, we've looked at drought. We've had some really severe cold throughout of the last three winters. I'm kind of up in the air as to whether to tell you to replant this fall or maybe think about putting in just some perennial rye or something, even though it's not perennial. It will die out in the summer, to give you something green through the winter months because it will grow well in the shade. And think about replanting the St. Augustine next spring. Again, the Farmer's Almanac says we're going to have a really cold winter. Who knows? It would be unusual to have, you know, 3 out of 4 years where it got excessively cold. But if it's a small area, go for it. If it's a big area, I'd seriously consider just planting winter rye and then not the old annual Oregon rye, but the good, what they call perennial. The other problem is that if the water situation continues to, you know, deteriorate, and because when you first plant grass, you've got to water it every day.
Yeah.
And, you know, these blasted purveyors of water are kind of heartless when it comes to handing out tickets and horrible fines and things like that for something that in most cases is not the best way to handle the situation. I'm trying to be nice about this, but I don't want you to run into problems, and it may very well be that waiting till spring to plant may be a good choice this year.
Well, that sounds like a pretty good time to do it. So my next question is, now in the front yard is facing to the west,
uh-huh.
and it gets sun almost from mid-morning all the way to the afternoon.
Yes, sir.
And we've got Bermuda.
Mm-hmm.
Tilth Bermuda planted in the front yard.
Right.
But over in one corner, we've got some oak trees that are getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and it has killed the Bermuda over in that part. What can I do? Can I take Augustine and butt it up to the living Bermuda?
Oh yeah,
put a divider and let that grow, or what?
Oh, dude, I wouldn't put any divider in there. I just let them duke it out, so to speak. In good condition, St. Augustine is stronger than Bermuda. In drier conditions, Bermuda is stronger than St. Augustine, and I don't see anything wrong with having, in effect, a mixed yard. Very few yards out there are, you know, absolutely pure one strain of grass against the other. But there's nothing wrong with planting a little St. Augustine back there. If you want to put a divider in, I wouldn't plant grass at all. I'd put a ground cover like Asian jasmine or something like that, and because it will grow in sun or in the shade. But if you want to have grass, just go ahead and plant your St. Augustine back there, and, you know, it'll do well in the sunnier part, and the Bermuda will do, I mean, it'll do well in the shadier part, and the Bermuda will do well in the sunnier part, and nothing at all wrong with having them mixed up like that.
And they'll kind of keep their self, I guess, separated from the amount of sun that's available, or what?
Yeah, Yeah, it's just in the sun. The Bermuda's going to dominate. In the shade, the St. Augustine's going to dominate.
That sounds good to me. Now, she's got two dogs, Great Danes. How detrimental are they to the Augustine?
No more so than they are to the Bermuda. I mean, two big dogs are going to run a path through it, and dogs, and I love Danes. Golly, saw one in the airport the other day, just enormous. But if they have a given path that they run, you may want to consider just, you know, making a mulch path in that area, because they're going to wear the grass out, whether it's Bermuda or St. Augustine, either one. Some people will put down some decayed granite, because dogs will tend to follow one path. And so you may want to create just a little bit harder surface for them to run on. But no grass is going to stand up to two big Great Danes.
I know it, man. It's like two horses out there all day long.
Yes, sir. But they're wonderful dogs. They are.
Hey, look, thank you, Bob, for the info. That sounds logical to me, buddy.
Well, listen, I appreciate the call. You get out and have a good weekend, do a rain dance, and we tried to drag a little bit of that cooler Colorado air back, but it may take a day or two for it to get here.
Hey, you don't want to see me dancing now, okay?
If it brings rain, I'll put up with anything, Joe. So anyway, have a great weekend, and we'll talk again. Remember, we will go on phone calls after the news here, since Howard's out of town. And grab a line if you'd like. We'll be right back here on KTSA Radio.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. Talk to Bob now. 210-599-5555.
All right, back to gardening on a nice Saturday morning out there. It's going to be Judy and George and Tana. If you're just joining us, I know normally we're visiting with the Dirt Doctor, Mr. Howard Garrett, at 8 o'clock on Saturdays, but he's on a plane and wasn't available this time. So we'll get back to our visit with Howard next week. Right now, it's Judy's turn. Good morning, Judy.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have... numerous trees that have died, but one is a great big, I guess it's a pin oak or red oak.
Mm-hmm.
Bottom of it is all green, and the top is deader than a doornail. I don't know if I should cut the top off or wait for it to come back. I don't know what to do.
Overall, how big is this tree? 20 feet, 30 feet? 40 feet?
5 feet, I would say.
I'm sorry, you kind of broke up there. How tall?
25.
At that size, I think if you can provide it water, it has a chance to come back out and make a decent tree. Pin oaks are more of an East Texas tree, so you might want to ask an arborist exactly what it is, but not knowing how much longer this drought is going to go on, not knowing what our water situation is going to be, I would be reluctant to say take the whole tree out. Unless at 25 feet, it doesn't sound like they're just major limbs that are likely to break and fall. I probably would just mulch it. I would make certain that the root flare is exposed. I would water as best you can, not frequently, but watering extremely thoroughly. Let's get it through the winter. It's going to drop all its leaves this winter, and you're not going to be able to tell the portion that's without leaves. It's all going to be without leaves, so it's not going to be terribly unattractive. And let's see where it comes out in the spring. I just don't think I'd get carried away with cutting it back at this point.
Well, it's right next to a pecan tree, and the pecan tree is doing wonderful. So
yeah.
I don't know. But
well,
after that little rain, all my lilies popped out. It was like springtime.
Well, I wish we would have more. I was commenting driving through Bernie yesterday. I didn't know there were so many rain lilies around. Even some of the little bright red oxblood lilies are starting to bloom. So let's just hope we get into a little bit more consistent pattern of rainfall, because some people still haven't had hardly any rain in the past several months. So we need a lot more, but...
Well, I think we only got about an inch and a half, and I was...
Do you know how many people out there got a quarter of an inch, and they hear you saying, oh, we only got an inch and a half? They're sitting there beating their heads on the wall about that. But, no, it, yeah. It
5 inches.
Yep.
I know. It's sad. It's really, really sad.
Well, it's Texas, and... the one thing we know, it's going to change one of these days, maybe for the better, maybe for the worse. But for now, you know, let's just see how that oak tree does again. What area do you live in?
In east off of Interstate 10, Hallisville, Lavaca County.
Okay. Yeah, pin oak's not your best oak to begin with, but I'd let it get through the winter, see how it comes out. About next March, and then we'll make the decision whether it needs to stay or go.
Well, it was a volunteer. It came up by itself.
Yeah.
And so I let it live.
Well, and, you know, if it's not going to just be totally dominated by that pecan tree, nothing at all wrong with having a mixed canopy. So, yeah, I don't get out the pruning shears yet. Let's see how we get through the winter and how it comes out next spring.
They said I have too many trees in my front yard, but my electric bill says I don't.
It may be hard to grow Bermuda grass, but as long as you can water them, too many trees are just enough, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't have much grass at all. That's okay. I got pine needles as a base. My daddy planted pine needles. Pine trees here about 60 years ago, and they're dwindled down to about 25, but I'm not going to cut them down. They're beautiful.
No, I would just enjoy, and I appreciate the call. You get out and have a great weekend.
You too, Bob.
Thanks, Judy. Appreciate it. Goodbye. George is next in line. Good morning, George.
Good morning. Hey, question. I got, my wife calls them water oaks. It's about 25, 30 foot tall.
Uh-huh.
But it's got, towards the base, it's got big chunks of bark just falling off of it. And I'm a little worried because the trunk itself looks like it's got a lot of vertical cracks in it. And I'm thinking that thing's about ready to come down.
And how big a tree is this?
Diameter-wise?
Yeah.
Probably about 2 foot.
Okay. And so obviously it's been there a long time. And how does the foliage look on the tree? Does the growth look good?
The top of it's pretty well bare. And there's just bare areas of just branches, no leaves or nothing.
Yeah. It is probably, there is it's actually kind of a form of a live oak. They do call a water oak. They're grown most commonly over around Houston. And what you're seeing is just probably drought damage. I doubt that the root flare is not exposed. I think it, you know, if the tree's been around that long, if it's seems to have just dead areas here and there through the top, it's almost certainly just drought-related. I'm not concerned about the bark peeling off. It's a normal thing for a tree to lose bark periodically, and sometimes you will get those vertical splits just as the trunk grows. It's kind of like a snake or a lizard sheds its skin because the bark can't, you know, continue to stretch and grow. So have an arborist take a look at it if you like. I would focus on, if you can, periodically, once a month even, give it a really, really thorough deep watering. I don't think I'd be quite ready to give up on it. They're not susceptible to particular diseases, but we've got to get some more moisture. We've got to get, you know, some more water in the ground. But I would certainly hold off until spring. It's going to drop a lot of its leaves late winter, early spring, just like a live oak does. See how it comes out next spring, and then decide how much, if any, pruning you need to do on it.
Okay. I appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you very much.
It's my pleasure, George. I appreciate the call. Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Goodbye. All right. Tana, hang on just a minute. I need to get a break in here, and you will be up next. And I get to talk once again about Green Grow Organics and Sam Sitterly. I've told you for years about Sam and what a good job he does as a consultant, helping people figure out what's right and what's wrong with their yards. And you know his motto, saving the world one organic landscape at a time. But tell you about a new program that they are doing, and that is where you can set up to have them come out on a quarterly basis. I mean, there's no contract or anything that's going to tie you into long-term things. But Sam just hates to see these companies that come out and spread poison, put out the wrong kinds of fertilizers, and charge a fortune for it. So he has a program where they will quarterly come take care of your yard. It includes things like go on a quarterly basis. They apply the actively aerated compost tea, which serves as a fertilizer, unlimited nematodes as needed on an annual basis. They put out a special application of micronutrients. They just do what it takes, but they do it organically. Everything Sam does is organic. And like I say, he still does his consulting services, but if you'd like somebody that will basically take over the feeding needs, the insect control needs of your landscape, this is just a great program because you don't have to worry about it. You're not always calling to set up appointments. They'll get you on a regular schedule, but again, like I say, you're not tied to a contract or anything like that. Very reasonably priced. Sam has thousands of just people who just love him because of how much he's done to help them with their landscapes. And it's certainly a program worth looking into. Do not call one of these companies once it comes to spread poison on a quarterly basis. Sam will do the same thing with natural and organic products and control your insects and diseases at the same time he's feeding and maintaining your landscapes. Puts mycorrhizal fungi in each liquid application. I could just go on and on about what good programs they have. His name is Sam Sitterly. His business is Green Grow Organics. Check him out online, greengroworganics.com, or give him a call anytime, 210-599-5565, 599-5565 for Sam with Green Grow Organics.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster, News Talk 550, KTSA, and FM 107.1.
All right, back to gardening. It's going to be Tana and Mimi and Terry. Tana is first. Good morning, Tana.
Good morning, sir. I have questions about two different types of trees.
Okay.
This spring, I was the recipient of about a 1 foot tall crepe myrtle.
Okay.
It is now doubled in height. But it also has two trunks that are coming up. Should I go ahead and cut off one of those two trunks since it's coming out of the same root ball?
I wouldn't. And here's the reason why. Crepe myrtles tend to grow and put a lot of foliage up high, lots of flowers and things like that. And because of the shape that they grow, they can be, you know, susceptible to storm damage when we get high winds. Where you have a multi-trunk crepe myrtle, and I'd rather see, you know, three or four trunks really than one, that it tree is much more resilient, it's much less likely to be damaged in a storm. And if you do get a bad storm and it breaks one trunk, then you've still got lots of plant there. You probably won't even miss it. Occasionally I see them pruned into single trunk trees, and occasionally I see where just the entire top of that tree got snapped out, you know, by one of our occasional very gusty thunderstorms. So I prefer seeing multiple trunks on crepe myrtles. Now, I do like to kind of keep them pruned up where I see the bare trunks and then have the foliage and flowers up on top. So you can prune that way as much as you like, but I sure wouldn't be in any rush to take one trunk out. The other thing is we don't know where this plant came from. We don't know what kind it is. We know it grows fairly quickly. But we don't know if it's going to stop at 6 or 8 feet or if it's going to grow on up and make a 35-foot tree, because there are crepe myrtles that mature at anything from 24 inches to 35 feet. So at this point, I would probably keep some of the lower limbs trimmed out, but I definitely wouldn't take the whole trunk out.
Okay, and you're right. I have no idea what color it is. You know, it's a matter, here, has a plant.
Yeah, well, the price was right. You can certainly say that for it. But,
absolutely.
And crepe myrtles are among our most beautiful summertime plants, and some of them have just absolutely gorgeous bark in the winter months, that kind of reddish-colored bark. And they, most all of them, especially the darker flowered types, tend to have brilliant yellow leaves in the fall, better than many of the trees do. So crepe myrtles are in the right situation. They're one of the best plants you can have. So hopefully this is going to turn out to be a color you like and a size that you can maintain.
Okay, and about the other one, I had called you several weeks back about a bur oak that had been way out, neglected, never got watered, nothing at all. Mm-hmm. And it started losing its leaves. But the thing of it is, what worries me is the fact that the leaves are brown, but they've stayed on the tree, what there are of them. You know, there's not a lot of leaves on that thing to begin with.
Right.
But I've got some azomite. I've composted. Well, first of all, I got out there and got all the soil from around the roots.
Uh-huh.
And I've got some huge roots that are coming out.
Mm-hmm.
So it now has roots to breathe. And I've used the Has to Grow as fertilizer. And it had been weeping places out of the trunk.
Mm-hmm.
And so the sap has quit leaking.
Uh-huh.
And I don't have any more leaking sap, which I took to be a good sign. It's had about 2 weeks of pampering and water and water.
Right. And that water is the most important thing. Can't really judge a lot based on 2 weeks on a tree that could live for 200 years. But I think the water, and now that you've got the root flare exposed, I think the water is the most critical thing. The azomite's going to help a good deal. The fertilizer is going to help a good deal. But as you may have heard me tell a caller earlier, we've just got this problem with this, what we call the subsurface layer, from about, you know, a foot or two down to 6 to 10 feet. You're in more loose open soil, so your layer, we would call the subsurface, is thicker. But it's just gotten so dry, and unfortunately, when that layer gets dry, it tends to wick water down. It starts stealing from the water that you put on the top of the ground and pulling it down further into the ground before the tree gets the full benefit of it. So little mulch is always good, watering as thoroughly and deeply as you can, you know, every couple of weeks or at least every month. Going to be the best thing you can do for that tree, but more than anything, I hate to say it, we need a flood. We need some really torrential rainfall to put some water back into our creeks and our rivers, which in turn puts water back into our aquifers and works to moisten that subsurface layer that has just gotten so dry. So the water is the most important thing you're going to do. Mulch would be nice. Fertilizer and the azomite are nice, but the water is going to be the most critical thing going forward.
Okay, now, I'm in the McDonough area that has
right. The
heavy clay soil.
Okay.
So.
And, yeah, you well, it, do you have any sand at all on top? Most of the soils that I've seen down there, you've got a thin layer that drains well, and then you've got the heavy clay underneath.
No, my yard is sort of divided into two sections.
Uh-huh.
And the section that this tree is in, and by the way, it's about a 22-year-old tree.
Okay.
And the section that this tree is in heavy clay.
Okay.
You know, if it gets wet and you dig it, it comes out in big clumps. It dries into clumps that are rock hard.
Right. Well, again, obviously the tree is happy there, or it wouldn't have lived for 23 years, wouldn't have gotten as big as it has. But I think the principle is still the same. When you water it, you know, try to water it as thoroughly as you possibly can, but don't do it too often. Probably every 2 to 4 weeks is all that tree really needs to be watered. And whatever you do, don't get into where you're watering it every few days. Water real thoroughly when you can, then let it, you know, get almost to that rock hard state, and then water it very thoroughly again. And that's what will bring the tree through the drought better than anything else you could do.
Okay. When it was first put in, it dropped these huge acorns.
Oh, yeah.
And I have not seen an acorn from that tree in about 15 years or more.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. Well, I will go ahead and water him once a month, as the old saying goes, whether he needs it or not.
I'm sure he'll need. And if you can, you know, any kind of mulch you can put over the root zone, the free mulch from the brush dump is ideal, because the other thing that's really going to help is keeping the soil cooler. This tree's lost a lot of the leaves, so it's not doesn't have the natural shade that it would normally be providing over its own roots. If you can put 3, 4, 5 inches of mulch over as much of the area, start a couple of feet out from the trunk. You want good air circulation there. But as you move out away from the trunk, a thick layer of mulch will keep that soil as much as 40 degrees cooler than it would be in the bright sun, and that's going to help that tree a great deal as well. And like I say, it doesn't have to be super fancy, expensive mulch that you go out and buy somewhere. Even just what they give away at the brush dumps around would be a great thing to put on, just to provide some shading for the surface of the soil. And then as it slowly decomposes, it puts some nutrients back in. But mulching winter and summer is just one of the best things you can do for trees.
Okie doke. And approximately when should I expect to see green leaves if I am successful in keeping him alive?
About March. Yeah.
Wonderful. That's my birth month. I will remember that.
Very good. Well, Tane, it's always good to hear your voice. You have a wonderful weekend. I know we'll talk again. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Bye. All right, Mimi and Terry, you guys will be up next. Don, let's get a break out of the way and come back with more gardening.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 107.1.
Texas, the Powerball jackpot is over $800 million.
All right, let's leave that behind and move on with some with some more fun stuff, and that is gardening. And Mimi, Terry, and Candace are my next three callers. Good morning, Mimi.
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
I would like for you to tell me everything there is to know about Arborvita.
I just got
back from New Hampshire, and I saw them everywhere, and I fell in love with them. Is that a plant or a tree for San Antonio?
Do you want to move back to New Hampshire or maybe Wisconsin? Or
no.
Howard Garrett's first book, I think it was his first book, was called Plants of the Metroplex. And I've always loved, I mean, my grandfather had them in his yard in Dallas. But Howard's comment about them is that every insect known to man either eats or lives in this shrub. So I'll tell you, you can grow them if you want to, but they're never going to be as pretty as they are further north. And you're going to fight bagworms, you're going to fight spider mites, you're going to fight diplodia twig dieback. It's one of those plants that it'll stay alive, but it's kind of like hostas. They just simply don't like our climate. And Arborvita, you know, they have that kind of teardrop shape. And they're really pretty about the first 3 to 5 years they're in the ground. But then after that down here, they just start having, you know, areas of them die out. And like I say, they get bagworms, they get 10 different bug problems. So I would discourage you from planting them. I know there are people that sell them, and they will stay alive here, but my old friend Alton Grimm, gentleman that was one of my mentors that I worked with for a while, I used to come up with a good plant and do exactly like you're doing. Say, Alton, I just saw or just heard about this wonderful shrub, or I saw it on a trip somewhere, and he says, well, how many of them do you see growing around here? And I say, well, I've never seen one. And he says, well, you know, there's a pretty good reason for that. So anyway, it's not a plant that I would plant, Mimi. It'll survive, but you will struggle with it. And unfortunately, there's nothing in the good plant list that looks just like that. It has kind of a unique look. It has that flattened conifer-looking leaf to it, but it's just a plant that's going to give you problems.
So you are saying not to pull out my Nandinas, but let them be and let them grow and forget about the Arborvita.
I think for the amount of money you would waste on trying to grow an Arborvita, you can buy a plane ticket and run up to New Hampshire once a year and see them up there where they belong.
Okay. Well, I'm glad I called you because I was getting ready to go out and start with your nursery to see if I can buy them.
No,
so
I won't
do that.
No, I think you'll be. I think they would just be an ongoing problem for you. So sure am glad you called.
Me too, Bob. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Mimi. Thank you. It's always good to hear from you. Let's see. Next in line is Terry. Good morning, Terry.
Morning, Bob.
Hey, good morning, Bob. Sir. Yes, sir.
I'm calling for a friend, for real, and he's got a...
That's what everybody says when they don't admit what's going on in your yard, but I believe you. I will believe that it is actually for a friend, so go right ahead.
He about 2 years ago, he put in a TIF 419 yard, and it's growing great, but in that yard, and I've seen this on golf courses on the greens, there's this, I guess it's a weed. It's a type of grass, and it grows out almost in a perfect circle. And as short as they cut those greens, it only gets to about 2 or 2.5 inches in diameter.
Right. Right.
Now, in his, he was cutting his yard about 2 3/4, and it allows it to get bigger. And some of those spots are, golly, 10 inches, 8 inches across. And he's got many spots in his yard with that with that plant. I don't know what that weed is or what that is, but what would you suggest as far as trying to, if you try to dig it up, it's a mess to dig it up.
Fertilize, water, and mow it lower.
Go lower.
Yeah, TIF Bermuda is the second toughest grass that I know of. Believe it or not, inadequate water, St. Augustine, is the strongest grass we have, and St. Augustine will actually choke out Bermuda. But nobody in their right mind can give, you know, St. Augustine enough water, and nobody should have in my opinion, should have a big area of it. But TIF Bermuda, if it's in the sun, there are two things that it loves. It loves water, and it loves fertilizer. And, I mean, if he has to go to feeding, I'd feed at least quarterly. Your golf courses in places, they feed dilutely, and they do it like every 2 weeks. And, you know, they mow a green every day, and actually they, you know, in the kind of that frog area around the green, say, let it get taller, but they mow that green down to 1/2 inch tall. So I would tell him to more water, more fertilizer, drop that mower down to maybe 1.5 inches, and the Bermuda will choke out that weed completely. Otherwise, he's just going to fight it on and on. The chemicals that the golf courses use to try to suppress it, suppress the TIF as well, and just TIF's just a great grass if you've got good sun, but it loves fertilizer, it loves water. Given the right conditions, given fairly low mowing, it'll choke that weed out, and you'll never see it again.
Okay. I told him to go 2.5, but that, I mean, 2.25, but that wasn't enough. You say about 1.5 then.
Well, we're getting toward the end of the growing season. If he wants to go 2.5 for the rest of the fall, that's fine. But start out a little lower in the spring and stay a little lower because, I mean, you get down on your hands and knees. It's been a few years since I played much golf, but they're mowing those greens to 1/2 inch or less. So 2.5 is pretty tall. The rough areas around those areas on the fringes of the greens, yeah, they let it grow up taller. But TIFF is one grass that you can mow it down to the point that we'd almost call it scalping, and it loves it.
Okay, yeah. But he does use a green and grow. I got him on that,
yeah.
And he's got a sprinkler system, so we'll have to work on the how high he cuts it, and that'll.
And be sure, you know, be sure that he is really flooding it when he waters it, but then not watering, you know, too often. Because like all Bermudas, TIFF is happy with once a week watering. And most of the weeds are, they show up in areas to get a little bit more water than that. And I know a lot of people maintaining that kind of area, they want to water it 3 times a week or something like that. The TIFF does not need that, and that's one thing that's contributing to the weeds. He's probably watering more often than he needs to.
Oh, okay. All right. But with the type of soil, I call it soil, but it's more like concrete. He's a few miles north of Floresville.
Uh-huh.
And like you said, most of the clay has some soil, sandy soil on top of it.
Yeah.
There's about 2/3 of his backyard clay is all the way to the top, and when he trenched that for that sprinkler system, that is the hardest I've ever seen a soil be. He used a commercial trencher because of those rental ones that they wouldn't it would have messed it up.
Well, and you know, that's why they use some of that stuff for road base and everything else. When it's wet, it's a muddy mess. When it is dry, it is like you say, it is like concrete. Now, the other thing that TIFF would love would be, and a golf course does this 8 times a year, is a very thin top dressing of compost. You know, most people I tell put 1/4 to 1/2 inch on that TIFF. He can do that, and he can mow a little higher if you put some compost on spring and fall. But they actually go in with about 1/8 inch of compost 8 times a year. And that will work on softening that soil. That will work with, that will help with water absorption. That's the other thing that'll really make a difference. Not quite as thickly as we would put it on other grasses, but on that TIFF, just practically the thinnest layer he could put on, that starts feeding humic acids, fulvic acids, all kinds of good things down into the soil. It stimulates the bacteria that they actually, they form a honeycomb-like structure with those little tiny clay particles, and over time, that's what turns that heavy clay into a much more friable, much better soil material. So then application of compost, a little compost tea if he wants, but that's the other thing that's going to both help the soil and help his grass.
Okay. All right, I'll pass that on to him. I've got an issue with my yard also. There's a grass, and it looks like it's got blades like San Augustine, but it seems to grow right on top of this. I got, boy, nothing but sand here. And but it grows, if I reach down and grab it, I can pull maybe a square foot up that seems like it's not even attached to the soil. And this stuff is, it's going crazy in my yard. And I just wanted, without, you know, your crystal ball, if you don't have a picture to look at, I don't know if you know what I'm talking about. It doesn't flower or anything. It just,
but it looks kind of like St. Augustine, but it's tougher and flatter and doesn't have the root system. It's probably what they call centipede grass, and a lot of people confuse it for St. Augustine. Once again, the heat this summer, the stuff is just hanging on. It's just trying to stay alive. I think if and when we get back to a little bit more regular rainfall, a little bit of moderation in temperature, your St. Augustine will come back and will help to choke it out. But nothing you can spray on it that won't hurt your St. Augustine as much as it will hurt that. But St. Augustine will gradually choke it out if we can get back to, you know, a little bit more regular rainfall and a little bit more moderate temperatures. It's just all the plants we like, when it's 106 degrees, they're just hanging on trying to live, and some of the bad guys get a foothold. But if you're over this way sometime, bring a little sample by, but I bet you it's just what you call centipede grass, a little bit better growing conditions. Your St. Augustine will push it up to the surface, and you'll mow it off.
Okay, I think, we went through that rough, a summer, it was pretty rough, but that July heat, I noticed the St. Augustine thinned out some, and this stuff filled right in with, you know, what was open, so
What happens when the going gets tough? Sometimes the good guys get pushed around by the bad guys, and that's just what went on in your yard. But let's hope that we get back to a little bit more typical. Again, you know me, I never say normal. A little bit more typical weather situation. I think your St. Augustine will get back to what you're used to.
All right, that sounds good. Yeah, let's get back to normal.
typical. Normal doesn't exist in Texas. I'm sorry about that.
That's right.
Terry, get out and have a great weekend.
You too, Bob.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Candace, hang on just a second. Don, let's get our last break of the show done, and we'll be back with time for another phone call or two.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 1071.
All right, getting down toward the end of the show. Remember, we will do this again tomorrow morning from 8 until 11. Dr. Kirby will come in at that point. We'll have an hour of talk about your pet's health, but time for a little more gardening today and time to talk to Candace. Good morning, Candace.
Well, good morning. Good morning to you.
And to you as well.
I've got a problem about a mature post oaks, and
okay.
I worry that I have hypoxylon fungus on it.
Mm-hmm. Hypoxylon canker?
Yes. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, hypoxylon, or it is a fungus. You're exactly right. It's just post-harvest, call it hypoxylon canker. But it is a fungus. It is a disease that is stress-induced. And post oaks are one of those trees that don't like anything but perfect weather. They don't like it if it's too hot. They don't like it if it's too cold. They don't like it if it's too wet. They don't like it if it's too dry. It's kind of like a spoiled teenager these days. They just want it their way. And when you have situations, whether it's weather, whether it's water, whether it's nutrients, anytime a tree gets stressed, and it's very common in hackberries, very common in post oaks, common in some of the other oaks, it can get the hypoxylon canker. And there is no real cure for it. We try the best we can to reduce the stress, which will reduce the amount of canker. If it's widespread through the tree, there's just not a whole lot we can do about it. And unfortunately, we do lose trees to hypoxylon canker. But the best thing you can do, go to Howard Garrett's website, go to what he calls the sick tree treatment. It involves pulling the soil back away from the base of the tree, maybe applying some azomite and a few other things. That's the absolute best thing you can do for that post oak, unless you can wave your magic wand and give us some more thorough deep rains and get away from this 105 plus temperatures. But hypoxylon canker is a disease. It is a disease that kills trees, but like I say, it's stress related, and the only thing you can do for that is try to reduce the stress and just improve the care of the tree, so to speak.
Well, Bob, what about things like spraying the trunk with seaweed, hydrogen peroxide, or cornmeal?
All the better. Same thing around. Don't go overboard with peroxide on the ground, but making some corn water tea and spraying, and making some, you know, corn water tea and pouring over the roots. Even putting out just straight cornmeal helps. I don't normally do that because in my part of the world, put out cornmeal, you get hogs. When we got too blasted many of those things already, and they just tear the ground up. But yeah, liquid seaweed, molasses, liquid fish blends, all those things, which we ought to be doing to our trees anyway.
Yes.
And it's what I say, sick tree treatment's not just for sick trees, it's for healthy trees as well. But that's the best thing you can do for a post oak. And like I say, don't beat yourself up too badly, because sometimes they get it, sometimes they grow out of it, and sometimes they don't. But it's not necessarily anything that you've done or haven't done. This just has been probably, and I've been around a lot of years, this is probably the most stressful summer for plants that I've ever seen. And a lot of the bigger trees, unfortunately, post oaks and some of the other oaks are just kind of the wimps of the tree world, and they're the ones that are going to have that problem most quickly. The thing that you're going to have to watch is get an arborist to look at that tree periodically, because hypoxylin weakens the trunk, weakens the root system, and that tree is going to be more susceptible to storm damage. And I trust it doesn't tower over your home or your driveway or something like that. I'd be very concerned in that case, and I'd probably have an arborist make an annual inspection and see if he recommends removing any of the weight or anything like that, because a tree with hypoxylin is very definitely less sturdy than another tree.
Well, that's good, but one last short question. Can I use corn gluten instead of cornmeal?
No. Absolutely not. Okay. They're two entirely different products. Okay. You can use corn gluten, but corn gluten, when you take all the sugar out of the corn, you take away what they call the high fructose corn syrup, corn gluten meal is the protein component that's left behind. It can be used as a fertilizer. It can be used as a natural pre-emergent, but it totally loses its ability to grow the trichoderma fungus, which is how we get fungus control. We're actually controlling a bad fungus with a good fungus. And whole ground cornmeal grows this beneficial fungus called trichoderma, which in turn attacks the other damaging fungi. If we use corn gluten meal, we don't get any of that trichoderma growing fungus control support. It's not a bad product, but it's not something we use for fungus control.
Thank you very much. All my questions are answered.
And I'm glad to be here for you, and I hope you'll call me again. I look forward to talking to you, Candace.
Thank you.
Thank you. Goodbye. Bye. All right, 2 minutes until 9 o'clock, almost to the second. So we'll do this again tomorrow morning from 8 until 11. I hope you join me then. If you didn't get your question in today, we'll look forward to talking tomorrow. Good time to get out and work in that fall garden. It's still way too early to plant spinach and some of our really cool weather things, but and I think it's too late to plant tomatoes. It's just we don't have enough time for them to grow and mature before the cool nights set in, but good time to plant broccoli and cauliflower and all of our coal family plants. Time you can start planting our root crops like radish and carrots and beets and turnips and things like that. Most leafy vegetables, chard, you can certainly plant now. Kale, you can certainly plant now. Like I say, spinach, do not plant spinach yet. Spinach needs much cooler weather, and hopefully that'll be coming around pretty soon. Remember to fertilize. Getting ready for the potentially cooler, colder months, fertilizing in the fall is very important. It's probably the single most important time of the year for fertilizing. So if you haven't fertilized in the past 90 days, get a good organic product, Medina, Maestro Grove, Nature's Creation. Get your whole landscape fertilized, not just your grass, but your trees and shrubs and ground covers and your flower beds, vegetable gardens. Even if you're not ready to plant, put that fertilizer down, put some compost on top and water. It'll do absolute wonders to soften the soil and get you ready for those things that do need to have a little bit more cool weather. You want to try to get in a fall crop of snow peas, edible pod peas. That's something else you need to do. Remember, there's a bush form and a climbing form. Depends on your garden situation, which one you use. Martin Bamba comes up right after the news here. If you've got home improvement questions, you know where to call. And once again, I sure do thank you for joining me today. I got a big load of plants to go unpack that just arrived. This is KTSA Radio.